So good evening and welcome to Radical Women's celebration of Queer Pride Month. Tonight we've brought together activists who continue to impress us, who are working in the queer movement and involved in LGBTQIQ issues locally and nationally. For this evening's panel, we'll highlight strategies in organizing and building links across diverse groups, look at ways to connect the fight against racism and class bias through multi-issue organizing, and address the need for reforms while exploring ways to support and build radicalism in the queer movement. I'm Ani Paradise. I'm a member of Radical Women. As someone who identifies as female and as a straight ally to queer and LGBT struggles, I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here as chair. I'm a doctoral student at CIIS, where Jordan and I studied and worked together. My understanding of the role of feminism and the power of alliances in shaping a mass movement and in destabilizing structures of oppression and exploitation that alienate us and isolate us has been greatly shifted through this friendship and through ongoing involvement with activists in the queer movement. In relation to a dissertation work on police and prisons, I work with various groups in the Bay Area, including at the California Coalition for Women Prisoners, which advocates for women and transgender prisoners throughout the California prison system. I'm from rural Maine on the Quebec border, and I'm keenly interested in conversations that engage the complexity of organizing efforts across rural and urban areas. Before I introduce our guests, I'd like to tell you something about the structure of this evening's event, or what we hope will be the structure of this evening's event. We have our fabulous panelists, and following their presentations, we also hope to have present with us this evening special group delegates who we've asked to come, who will speak briefly to their experience of working in shared spaces and on shared campaigns. Following the panel and the delegates, we'll have an open discussion for 45 minutes or so, and we want to hear from everyone. So at the end, we'll check in and see if the delegates have been able to come. And now for our panel. With us here this evening is Anita O'Shea. Anita is the Bay Area Radical Women organizer, a native of San Francisco, and graduate of UC Santa Cruz in Feminist Studies. Anita joined Radical Women when she was a teenager and has been a leader in the Bay Area Coalition for Our Reproductive Rights, BayCOR, for 5 years. She has worked as a community DJ and party promoter in the Bay Area, putting on benefits, fat-positive events, and radical queer dance parties. Anita, who also goes by Dirt, that's with a U, not an I, also goes by Dirt, identifies as a queer, gender-fluid, body-positive, socialist, feminist activist. Mm-hmm. Next, we have Toodles. Toodles is a member of Havoc Pride at Work. They began their organizing efforts in the labor movement. They continue their work in labor because they like... I might be reading... We were playing around with the structure of it. Let me see here. They began their organizing efforts in the labor movement. Toodles currently works in Local 2. For now, they identify as a female-bodied queer person of color who believes conflict is okay and healthy as long as there are good ways of conflict resolution. They continue their work in labor because they like to see a redefinition of work and the way we organize ourselves, from our home to our work to our chosen families. It's Toodles. Excellent. That worked out all right. And on my right, I guess everyone's on my right, okay, on my close right, is Jordan Johnson. Jordan is a dynamic national presenter and facilitator. He has presented extensively on working with and advocating for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community in New Mexico and nationally. He is a community organizer committed to examining the concepts of privilege and oppression, along with creating effective and sustainable community-based projects. He understands the significance of working with local communities and in creating sustainable change for social justice. He is currently a doctoral student in American Studies at the University of New Mexico with a focus on human rights specifically in relation to the transgender community. And I think that's it. Without further ado, would you like to start, Anita? Or?
I thought we were going to go this way?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So, Jordan, with that introduction.
All right.
One, I just want to... It's really great to see all of you here, and I look forward to having a conversation about some of the work that I am engaged in New Mexico. And I'm specifically going to talk about... I'm a board member of Equality New Mexico, and I have been working as the interim executive director, because you need to have some title, right, to sign off on things. So there's I'm a person who signs off on things when need be. And I have also just really worked hard on, just to tell you about Equality New Mexico is like the statewide LGBT organization. We do a lot of public policy, advocacy, education work. We're an all-volunteer organization. We have a part-time staff. We're not all volunteer, but we have one part-time staff. So we've really had to figure out how to continue the work, as well as keep a statewide presence in New Mexico. And I'll tell you a little bit, I don't know if many of you know New Mexico, but I'll tell you about the urban and rural dynamics of New Mexico as well. So what I just want to talk about is, and some of the work we're engaged in right now is around relationship recognition. We've done bullying prevention work, and we kind of do a lot of work around trans issues, and that's pretty much all we can do given the capacity we're at. So some of the relationship recognition work we've been working on is around domestic partnership legislation and having some marriage equality work put forth around public, you know, what that looks like in New Mexico, whether it's just trying to start a dialogue and conversation. You know, we've been fortunate to defend any Defense of Marriage Act. We don't have any. We have one of the best laws and constitutions around any kind of issue, because we're like a neutral, it's a neutral constitution. So just to give you a little insight there, there's also been a huge amount of disappointment in our community around not getting domestic partnership passed. We've got close to having just one vote, and then we lost a lot of votes, and then we're back to having, like, we need two more votes in order to get it through the session. But it's the disappointment within the community that has been one of the biggest challenges in thinking about organizing our work and how to get the community engaged and what that looks like. We partner with some of the people we partner with around this specific, I'm just going to use it as an example, is the American Civil Liberties Union, the labor unions. We also work with what's called the Gay Straight Alliance. There's Lutheran Advocacy Organization. We've also recently reignited a faith communities work group, because one of our biggest challenges in New Mexico is the Catholic presence and the Catholic churches. And the Conference of Catholic Churches came out in full force last year and said, we absolutely oppose any kind of recognition of same-sex couples, which has come down through, you know, larger structures of their... So in thinking about the work we do, I think a lot about how to contradict the Catholic voice that seems to become the universal voice for all faith communities. And it's not the reality, right? And so the other piece around thinking about the Catholic churches is there's a long history and legacy there. And Catholicism hasn't always been, there's a social justice component to Catholicism that is important to think about. And it also, I don't want to, the tricky part is there's people in the community are really engaged with and have this legacy in their families, and you can't just attack the Catholic Church. You know, it's not the approach to take, because racism plays out in a particular way then around that kind of history. And so one of the things I like to think about or try to figure out is how do you, it's a delicate balance, you know, because there's a lot of Catholics who support us in the work we do, you know, but how do you make them vocal and out and come and step up and be visible about that? Because there's consequences for them that is very devastating as well. So the other piece about thinking about alliances and thinking about doing relationship recognition work is who might we not be having at the table that we need to be having at the table? How do we get people to be engaged and committed for a long period of time? I mean, we're talking 10 to 15 years of work, and how do you keep people at the table consistently? People get tired and burnt out, and what does that look like? And how do you, and especially with there's a large amount of disappointment that exists, you know, it's devastating, you know. People, it's like an emotional roller coaster ride. People are always up and down, and some people just can't take that anymore. We also get critiqued because we're not going after like a marriage. Like, why are you doing domestic partnership? I'm not a second citizen, you know, and it's like we're doing everything we can to access our rights for our community. And sometimes what's difficult is the harshness comes within the community more than outside, you know? So to think about doing organizing or continuing to do the work and having that kind of critical voice within the, I will say primarily within the urban areas of our state. So to give you a picture of New Mexico, it's the fifth largest state. It's rural. There's a big city in Las Cruces, which is southern New Mexico. Albuquerque's in the middle, which is like the largest city. Santa Fe is north. So you have this kind of Rio Grande, like, corridor is what we call it, of like, here's where the most population of people are. And then hundreds of miles out, you have all these rural communities where there's a large population of queer folks, and people forget that, right? They don't want to live in Albuquerque. They want to live in Hobbs, New Mexico, right? They want to live in Farmington. They want to live in Roswell, where it's extremely conservative areas, but that's where they want to be, right? Why would we ask them to move out of their homes and to be more safe, right? So I think about how do you engage those rural areas where the dynamics in southern New Mexico is there's a large, you know, this is kind of the best way I can think about presenting it is there's the Mexicans in southern New Mexico, and then up in northern New Mexico you have the Spanish folks, and there's this history of like they hate each other, right? And so yet they're oppressed in a particular way. So you have to think about what does it look like to organize in southern New Mexico that's different than northern New Mexico, that's different than when you go out on the Navajo Nation, right? So, or even into the pueblos, how do you start to interact with pueblos who have different dynamics and have to be attentive to all those kind of relationships and what they look like and what organizing looks like in those communities. Because one way you can organize in Gallup, New Mexico is by going to a basketball game, you know, going to the flea market, like that's where you're going to meet people, going and standing outside of Walmart is where you're going to meet people, you know, like that's what organizing looks like on in Gallup, New Mexico. You know, where are you going to raise money in Gallup, you know, is by having something at the flea markets or the basketball games or their floats. Las Vegas has Fiesta Days, which is, you know, this long drawn out legacy there of, so you have a float in the Fiesta Parade, you know, it's not pride, but you have this presence, mm-hmm. which then created this large dialogue around queers in northern New Mexico. And it's like, of course they're there, you know, and they're like, you know, like there's a whole group of folks there. So some of the work that I really am committed to is thinking about supporting those people in the area, like supporting whatever is happening there is happening. So how do you just like allow that to kind of bolster and come up, you know? They're not critical. They're like so grateful that you're there. Like they're like, thanks for not forgetting about us, mm-hmm. you know? It's like, of course, you know, I would come here more if I could, you know? And then, like, Gallup or in Clovis, New Mexico, you know, they're, like, things. Like, it's building relationships across a rural state where you're driving 4 hours just to meet somebody for an hour, and then you're driving back. You know, like, that's the dynamics of the state. So So I guess, I don't know what I'm... So it's part of what I just wanted also to say is thinking about campaign work is, to me, is more not so much about a campaign, but it's really about building a movement and being engaged in a movement for the life, a lifelong process. And having a campaign mentality for us in New Mexico has really been not effective because it's like short-lived, right? It's like, here's a campaign and then we're out. Here's a campaign and then we're out. It's more like, if we can think about it as a movement, I think we're at that place of thinking of more like a movement and building the leadership within the movement and building the leadership in the areas of these rural areas, then we are able to effectively think about moving any kind of legislation or any kind of education and advocacy work forward. And the other, just one last thing we've done around thinking about strategically how to organize is New Mexico has prides throughout the state. And so we've called together all the organizers and made a pride summit, kind of like organize it. We get together quarterly, we meet with them, so there's not conflicting dates. We think about how we can work together. And it also allows us to reach communities in a particular way where we might not necessarily are able to, as well as support that kind of leadership in those areas, right? So it's not, we're coming in here, this is what you're going to do, but like, here, this is the relationship we get to have and develop. So we can talk more, so, but that's just some of what I do think about.
Excellent. Thank you, Jordan. Toodles? I'm Toodles. Thank you. Thanks for inviting me. I wanted to just comment on that. My friend is moving to Arizona recently, and she's a big activist, and part of the reason why she's moving there is because of, you know, Arizona is a playground or like a hot spot right now. But I was like, what are you going to do? How are you going to organize? Oh my God, it's so spread out. What are you doing? And we're just like, oh, she's like, I'm going to take guitar lessons. And I was like, yeah, do it in your guitar lessons class and just talk to people about that. Cause that's the, like, you know, the, maybe the organizations or the connections aren't quite built yet, but there are things like basketball games or, you know, where you go and do a drum circle or your guitar lessons. And that's where she's going to start. I'm from Havoc, and we're Havoc Pride at Work, and we renamed ourselves Havoc kind of to be a little bit more exciting and, you know, talking about strategy, what's going to get people to maybe want to come and see, hey, what's going on. And Havoc stands for the Horizontal Alliance of, well, it stands for a variety of things, which is part of, like, the Havoc name, right? It's Havoc. So it's either a Horizontal Alliance of Very Organized Queers or Voraciously Organized Queers or Haughty Alliance of Very Organized Queers or Vaguely Sometimes, depends on, like, how energized people are about stuff. So strategy and things like that. The revolution starts at home, and so when we come together and organize, we really needed to look at ourselves and how we were, how we organized ourselves before we could go out and try and organize other or work with other communities around that. The way Pride at Work is an affiliate with the AFL-CIO. There's a national, and then there's little chapters throughout the U.S. So we're our own chapter here in San Francisco. And there was about maybe 4 years ago, there was a resolution made at the national convention to try and be inclusive of more, or to try and rejuvenate the labor movement. And so there was a resolution that was passed to try and pull more youth in, and youth was defined as under 30. And since then, it, at least in the San Francisco chapter, it's really taken off. So in the last 6 months, I feel like our group has been a little bit more active. And the year before that, we were really doing a lot of internal restructuring and figuring things out. For example, we used to have an executive director that you know did
did all the procedural stuff, signed off on the grants, and so now we have an executive and a director. And one executes and the other one directs. But you know, that's the playful names that we give ourselves. And so both of those people are kind of like the bottom liners or the top liners or the hard liners, whatever you want to call it, of making sure that, of pulling in grants, and they're more, you know, pull in other members to try and work together to get these bigger grants. And we also have like a fundraising group. And so this, in the last year and a half, we really restructured ourselves, and it really changed the power dynamics and the way it, I mean, when we first started, people were, when I first came into it, I think people were functioning in a way, or through Robert's Rules of Order. But everybody else who was coming in, all the new members that were coming in had usually functioned through consensus. And so that was something natural that happened. We just started operating through consensus. And, you know, one day, and sometimes we pull in Robert's Rules of Order, you know, to move things along. And so we were just like, what's going on? We do this, we do that. And at one point we have a member who was named Robert at some point, and we said, oh, you know, we really need to talk about the way that we make decisions and this and that, because sometimes we use Robert's Rules of Order. And someone said, what, Robert? Why are we using Robert's Rules? We're like, oh, but, you know, that's how much people operated in just consensus or just like an understanding of how we functioned together. Just a breakdown of our group, we have like maybe four subgroups. One is called Homos Not Condos. Another one is called Migrant Justice, which we just renamed because it was like Immigrant Working Group or something, but I forgot what it was called, but we changed Migrant Rights. Thanks, that's a number back there. And we wanted to redefine it, not just as we're fighting for rights, but we're fighting for justice, and not just immigrant, but migrant in our ability to move beyond our worlds. And then we also have a labor group, which we've decided we need to give it some catchy name as well. I'll just give a little breakdown of like all the things that we're doing. So in the Homos Not Condos group, we've been working on a coalition called CityStop. And there was a large city apartments group, or landlord who would systematically buy a whole bunch of low rent controlled apartment buildings with old tenants and just scare people out of their homes to try and turn it, flip it, and make a profit. But through a lot of our organizing efforts and getting, you know, doing our internal development of teaching ourselves how to go and knock on doors and talk to people and educating ourselves around our own tenant rights, and then going out there and doing the same and having that that strategy of we're going to educate ourselves, we're going to make leaders out of our members, and then we're going to go out and we're going to do the same with these tenants. Was great. We worked with the San Francisco Tenants Union and St. Peter's Housing. And what other groups did we work with? I can't remember. So the SRO Collaborative. Oh yeah, and the what is that one? The Tenderloin Housing Clinic, THC, the Tenderloin Housing Clinic. Currently, we're also working on SITLI, Stand Against SITLI. It's going to be on the November ballot. and a lot of the work that we do is just the intersections of queer and everything else, because we can't lie to ourselves. Everything's connected, and we need to remember those connections that we have. We need to remember that we're all connected one way or another, and that that's why we restructured ourselves so that we could come all together on the same level and say, oh, we're all connected, and redefining what it means to take care of our community and expand that definition. So that's why we work on so many different things that are not just explicitly queer, but they do affect our queer selves. in the Sit Live, for example, it had passed like in the 70s, I believe, and at first it was used to target the hippies and the hate, but soon enough, homophobic cops ended up using it in the gay community in the Castro, where people were forming community out in the streets and trying to get young gay men out and arrested and cited. In our migrant justice group, in 2007, we went to a No Borders camp, which was very, very black bloc anarchist, which is fine. Or maybe even I would say black bloc monarchist, which... enough said with that. And so what we did as our queer contingent of queeros, anarchists, and everything fabulous that we are, we decided to go there and, like, bring light. And that was our strategy. We're going to, you know, it's a heavy situation on the border. It's real. Like, shit's fucked up. And I'm like, but in light of it, we still have to take care of ourselves. And so we were there, and we were like the Neon Brigade. We went there with, we gathered all the neon we could before we got there, and we set up camp, and it was just a really neat experience, because people, you know, queer or not queer, came to our space and were just like, oh, can we share space with you? Can we hang out here? Because everywhere else it was just so heavy and so. And we were there, and we were in neon, and we were in stripes, and we were laughing, and we were having a good time, and we were remembering what it was. And another thing that's important is just to meet people where they're at. And so in our group, there was people who were not into, didn't know all of the consensus signs or all the, you know, meeting signs, like, oh, the wavy fingers and the like the block or some other thing. So we had to make up our own queer... We took that and we flipped it around and did some magic stuff. So then instead of like saying that this was a good thing, we said this is a good thing. And instead of saying like this is like direct response or something, I think it was like, oh yeah, this was a direct response. Instead of like point of process, We said this was a point of process. So, you know, we really, like, meet people, you know, just trying to put fun and light of really tough, hard situations. And just traveling in a little queer group of people helps to do that, which we also did last year when we went to No More Deaths, which is a humanitarian aid group that does work on the Arizona-Mexico border, and that was really neat to be able to travel with a group of queer people to the border and just have that support of, because literally that this No More Deaths group brings in all kinds of people. It brings in the spectrum, and that's the beautiful thing about it. That it just brings in so many different people, and so to be able to come and be queer and bring our perspective and see that there's all these different kinds of groups of people coming together for just this one particular issue was great. Then our labor group, I hope, if you haven't seen it, maybe you'll see it after this, but we did an action with not with local too. It was with the BLO, the Brass Liberation Orchestra, One Struggle, One Fight, and ourselves. And we're targeting right now, Local 2 is in a campaign contract fight with the hotels. And so what we as queers, we were originally going to target the Grand Hyatt because they're really big on saying like, oh, we're really queer friendly. But so that had to change a little bit. But so we went into the hotels and we did a little song and dance to Caught in a Bad Romance by Lady Gaga, and we reworded it. If you haven't seen it, go to YouTube, click or type in Bad Hotel and it'll come up.
Song and dance, it's more like a massive choreograph.
I had to be on the outside because I work in local too, so I didn't know anything about it. And then, you know, bringing back strategy, we you know, what's the strategy? We need to, like, continue reviving ourselves. We see that, like, large mass protests and marches are just, like, not cutting it anymore. And so what do we need to do in order to draw people and, like, really start thinking and talking? So, you know, doing a song and dance. And we also, the Hornblowers, which is Alcatraz Cruises, is being boycotted right now because they're trying to form a union. And one of their workers was fired for being too gay, along with a slew of other things. So last weekend on Saturday, we had an action where we rolled out a red carpet. We had a come cruise with us instead of Hornblowers. And we just did a maritime theme and walked the red carpet. And we also did some work on ENDA, but a lot of the things that we do and strategize is the intersections of where, you know, taking care of ourselves and taking care of our community, and what does it mean to, like, to what does community mean? And so expanding that. We started at home and then we moved on from there. So.
Excellent. Thanks, too. I saw it. No,
one more thing. A shout out to Kuav because they're really good. I wanted to put them in here somewhere.
Okay, you want to.
And then also Bacorn, and hopefully Havoc later are going to be doing a Jesus block, tying it in with the Catholic comments that you made. There's going to be, like, maybe a rosary that's going to be coming out of a Jesus butt or something, like an anal bead rosary. And, you know, because there's a lot of really Catholic, like, young people there, and so we're not gonna go and try and, like, show them up or something and be like, oh, this and that. We're just gonna go and we're gonna have a good time, and we're gonna show them that being queer and being fabulous and having your rights is better than whatever they're doing.
Do you wanna say who Kuav is?
Yeah.
Kuav is Communities United Against Violence. They had their first ever safety lab or safety fest this year.
They do, like, domestic violence prevention and in the queer community, in the queer and trans community.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
great. Thank you, too.
Okay. Well, I'm really excited to be up here speaking with these two other awesome activists. And I feel like there's been really a energizing resurgence in the queer movement and queer activism. And that's extended to basically to fighting against violence and discrimination on the job, in public education, in the home, and in the streets. And this resurgence is being led by mostly queer youth, as most of the queer movements have been led by since Stonewall. And instead of going towards the Democrats, there is more of a drive to be radical. And that's, you know, what we're here to talk about tonight, being radical. And when I say radical, it simply means getting to the root of the problem. And it's an exciting time to be a radical because the economic downturn really signals the dying breaths of capitalism, and more folks are getting disillusioned with a system that bails out banks and corporations while schools and healthcare services and even recreation services are being cut. The legacy of Stonewall continues as more and more young people are standing up to be counted, to refuse to accept homophobia and sexism, whether for a young woman to bring her girlfriend to the prom or to speak out against cuts to funding to essential services for homeless queer youth or for women. And a little about me, I was born in the 80s after the Gay Liberation Front and, like, dozens of other groups had basically paved the way for it to even be legal for lesbians and bisexuals and transgender and queer folks to exist. And I joined Radical Woman when I was about 16. I was just out of high school and I was already an avid anti-capitalist, a feminist. I was in my Gay Straight Alliance. And now I'm 27, and I'm very excited to see that there is a new generation of young people who are even more comfortable with different kinds of sexuality and genders. I see that there are more of the queer movement being more visible in other kinds of movements, too, and more people are participating, joining groups, or forming coalitions and united fronts with each other and trying to work against a rotten system. And in the 10 years that I've been in Radical Women, we've been involved in several different kinds of campaigns, many for queer justice. And some of the campaigns I've been in, I think, have been fairly successful for lesser degrees than some. And I kind of wanted to, again, share what I feel like has worked and what needs to be improved. Right now, we're part of the fight for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which has been a long and arduous one. ENDA is a federal act and would basically prohibit employment discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. And about 60% of the population of the U.S. does not have any kind of protection on a state or local level for employment discrimination. We did achieve one victory because many people staged direct actions and public shaming of sellout groups like the Human Rights Commission, who had reneged on having the act include rights for transgender people. Thus, the current draft of the act does include coverage for trans rights. But we need to continue to fight to keep it in, and we need to pressure Congress to pass it already. And I did want to say, too, that I feel like a lot of people I've talked to have expressed some serious doubt about Nancy Pelosi and Congress really coming through on this. So I wanted to address that. We've learned that the Democrats have been able to weasel out of many promises and have provided false hope to the queer movement for years. The Democratic Party is a liberal capitalist party that has proven time and time again to betray the working class for bourgeois interests. And I was going to say, too, that even Barney Frank, who's the Democratic representative who put in this new version, or this most recent version of ENDA, has made some noise in the direction of changing it to take out trans inclusion if it doesn't pass in its current incarnation. And even if ENDA does pass, which would be really historic given that Equal Rights Amendment never passed, we will never have complete employment rights or equal employment rights. For example, there's still the wage disparity between men and women, and you know, women still make 70 cents to a man's dollar, or blacks won't be paid the same as whites. The reality is the bosses want to keep us divided and conquered, and the two political parties of capitalism are directly funded by those bosses. All us working people seem to have a common enemy in the capitalist system. Immigrant rights and queer rights are also an area of involvement for Radical Women. We've been connecting the issues from the beginning. Many immigrants are queer and suffer the most when there is an ICE raid and queer families are broken apart. We need to unite against a common enemy of the right wing. For example, we were in LA in April. Nancy went down, represented from the Bay Area. We had the LA chapter there. There was a Nazi rally at the City Hall in LA, and there was a huge counter-protest to them, which outnumbered them. And it was made up of, you know, immigrant rights activists, people of color, feminists, queer rights groups, and individuals. And we really want to make it clear that groups like the Minutemen or even like the Tea Party sort of represent a fascistic tendency of the right wing that needs to be confronted directly and not simply dismissed as wing nuts. Connecting the issues of queer rights and reproductive rights is also an important strategy. In the reproductive rights movement, queer radicals take the lead in standing up to the anti-abortionists who come to San Francisco every year, which Toodles had just mentioned. Basically, the Catholic Church mobilizes thousands to march in a walk for life in the darkest city of gay old San Francisco, and their leadership is made up of the same sort of bigots as the Minutemen and the Nazis. And every time the Bay Area Coalition for Reproductive Rights, or BACOR, has had a counter-presence to show alternatives to their women-hating and homophobia. So we've had groups like Havoc, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, Pro-Choice Families, the Raging Grannies, Queer Kissins, and many left socialist, feminist, and labor groups participate over the years. And every year we've attempted to broaden our outreach, but basically without the support from mainstream abortion rights groups like Planned Parenthood, we've been outnumbered by the anti-choicers. They also have they have more money. The Catholic Church has, whatever, billions of dollars. So until we can gain the support of a broader mass of people to take the Walk for Life seriously and oppose them, we're going to be struggling to keep them to stop, or try to get them to stop marching once and for all on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade and take it back as our holiday. The anti-abortionists, again, are the same people who oppose queer marriage and LGBT equality. Other connections are that women, along with transgender people, are fighting for autonomy over their own bodies. And along with labor and the immigrant rights movement, if we all work together, then we would be unstoppable. A little bit about radical women. We have a tradition of prioritizing the leadership of queers. LGBTIQ people are a direct challenge to the main building block of capitalism, the heterosexual patriarchal nuclear family. We're constantly beaten, harassed, ostracized, and vilified by mainstream society. Queers, along with sectors of the most oppressed, women, people of color, immigrants, and the working class, have a common enemy in the ruling elite. We have the least to lose and the most to gain from revolution and replacing capitalism with a more just and humane system. We'll fight the hardest for that system, which is socialism, where everybody's needs are met. The time is ripe for a multi-issue movement that addresses the needs of those who are the most oppressed in our communities, especially young queers and transgender folks. I wanted to put the call out to everybody here on a couple of different things. Definitely to participate in the boycott of that Local 2 is taking the leadership on, as Toodles talked about. To stand up to the right wing, that includes Nazis, Minutemen, and the abortionists. And I encourage everyone to get involved in BakeCor. There's a sign-up sheet over there if you guys want to get emails. And we have a statement over there as well. To fight for the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, you can go to endanow.com, and they have like sample letters and alerts and things like that. We also need to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the Defense of Marriage Act. And as radicals, I feel like we can play a role of educating that capitalism is never going to give us all of the rights that we need and deserve. I also think it would be great if there would be more of a connection made between trying to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, like connecting that movement to the anti-war and the anti-imperialist movement, to try to broaden it out a little bit more. It's really important that we're all fighting against the budget cuts, which I know many of us here are doing. We need to be able to tax the rich to protect youth, transgender people, elders, HIV-positive folks, the homeless, and others who are the most oppressed people in our communities. I want to put the call out to build coalitions and united fronts. Basically, united fronts are where working people are in the leadership to win some much-needed gains. We can, as maybe some people are skeptical about the left, but we definitely can put our differences aside and collaborate with many different kinds of people, even liberals, to achieve our goals, as long as the leadership is made up of the proletariat and radical fighters who have more militancy to get the job done. And my last demand, as it were, is to foster radical leadership. No more money and time to the Democratic Party. Let's help to build an anti-capitalist third party instead. Am I out of time? Almost. Right. Well, many of us here have a common goal in mind, and we're going to continue to fight and educate and empower ourselves for a better world. And I just wanted to say that maybe it's a long fight, but the survival of humanity is in our hands. And history isn't just something that's predetermined. It's not just laid out for us. You know, we have some power and control over it, and we have a chance to put it in push it towards a better direction. And hopefully we can do that with more glitter and flamboyance and maintain our optimistic joy in the activist work that we do. And that's it. I just want to thank everyone for coming, and I look forward to hearing from you all in discussion.